Blog Talk Radio. And this is my Wednesday midweek pick-me-up show of Say What? When? Where? And the question I've asked my whole life, why? And today I'm going to ask when. When is enough? When is enough? Because yesterday I was texting with my daughter-in-law about their up-and-coming trip to come to California, and she was getting her list ready of what they wanted to do this time while they were here, and she said, to the beach, to the beach, to the beach. They live in St. Louis, so they don't have an ocean very close to them. So I texted her back and sent her a picture of the sunset at our favorite beach we go to when they're here. And she texted back, I wonder how many sunsets you have seen. And I said, not enough yet. And then I wondered, you know, how much would be enough? How many sunsets would I be able to see? And then I could say, I've seen enough sunsets. And I realized there would never be enough. Never. And it reminded me of a conversation I had had with my dear friend Paul, who has now passed. I met him at the pool here in my retirement community. And near the end of his life, he had had a stroke, and it affected his speech. And he couldn't get the words out, but he could spell. And his wife still worked as a bank examiner. She was a lot younger than he was. In fact, I was instrumental in the two of them getting together. And she would take contract jobs and be gone, like a week or sometimes 2 weeks. So while she was gone, I would watch over Paul. I would take him to the store to get groceries, and I would take him to the pool, and then he would take me out to dinner. And he always dressed so, so snappy. His pants were always creased, and his shoes were shined, and he looked good. So one evening at dinner, we were talking about he had just had to have his dog put down right before his wife had left for the trip, and the dog was 18 years old. He had gotten to where he was barely able to walk and then even to eat, so they had to have him put down. And Paul was missing the dog because when his wife is gone, the dog is a lot of company. So I said, Paul, you know, we show our love for our animals by having them put down when they no longer have any real quality of life. You know, you had to have Sam put down. He nodded his head. And I said, you did it because you just couldn't watch him suffer one more day. It was enough. And you put him down. And he nodded. And I said, what would you think about having humans put down in euthanasia? He looked at me like I had lost my mind. And then here's what he said. In the final analysis, Paul said that he would not ever want to be euthanized because if there was even the remotest possibility that he could have one more sexual climax before he goes, he wouldn't want to miss that. So for a man, I believe there would never be enough sexual climaxes. So when is enough enough? You know, I believe there's never enough pictures. There will never be enough pictures if we're still getting together and doing things and going places, because pictures are our attempt to preserve that moment, a picture to look at long after the moment has passed, but to remember how wonderful it was. I have my 80th birthday coming up, and all of my children are coming to California for the event, from St. Louis, from Dallas, from Omaha, from San Francisco, from Arizona, from Pasadena. All of them, every part of my family is going to be here, and we're going to take pictures. Each of us is making our own list of the pictures we want to be sure and take. And we're going back into our picture albums to look at pictures we've taken before. And we're going to recreate some of these pictures. My youngest daughter found a darling picture of her 7-year-old son holding his new baby sister and kissing her on the head. And they are 28 and 21 now. And my oldest daughter's girls have a picture opening their Christmas presents together when they were 2 years old, 4 years old, and they're now 31 and 29. Well, all the pictures I have of my kids growing up are them doing the monkeys. They've been doing the monkeys since they were little children. You know, the monkeys that see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. And they just spontaneously do it without discussing in advance who's going to do what. And they always come out with one of them holding their ears or covering their eyes or covering their mouth. So I'm going to have a new picture of them doing the monkeys when they are 57, 56, and 49. Because there are never enough pictures. And there's never enough cake and ice cream. I'm ordering a special 80th birthday cake for myself. I'm going to get it. I get to pick it out and have it made exactly the way I want it. And what I want is carrot cake with buttercream frosting. And I want French vanilla ice cream with caramel topping and pecans. And we're not going to put 80 candles on the cake. We'd burn the house down. So I'm going to get a candle that's in the shape of an 8 and a candle in the shape of a 0. So that'll only be 2 candles to blow out, because that way I'll be for sure, I'll get my wish to come true. Because there are never enough wishes. And if you're a collector, I mean, whatever it is you collect, coins or salt and pepper shaker sets. I knew a lady who collected dolls. And she had 3 rooms in her house filled with dolls. Every wall had 12 shelves on all 4 walls. With doll after doll after doll displayed. 3 whole rooms full. And I collect hearts. I have a mahogany heart from Roatan. I have a crystal heart. I have a stone heart from the San Andreas Fault. I have a heart of seashells from Sanibel Island. And I have a satin heart from the Queen Mary. And then I also have a collection of the see no evil, hear no evil, and speak no evil monkeys. And more recently, I've added koalas, kangaroos, and pandas. Seeing no evil, hearing no evil, and speaking no evil. And I also have a collection of children's toys, which I've purchased over the years for my grandchildren, until I finally realized I was really buying them for myself to make that little girl inside of me happy. she never got any toys while she was growing up. She just got socks and new soles on her shoes and a new winter coat for Christmas. So now she has all kinds of neat toys. Well, when I look at the banking industry, I wonder how much is enough. Just how much debt is enough for them to keep us on this treadmill of materialism? You know, when the banks lowered the requirements for people to buy a house, they used that altruistic ideal that being a homeowner was the absolute right of an American. When what really happened was that more Americans than ever before were put into mortgage debt, and it was a debt they couldn't afford. So that whole thing plunged us into the recession, which was pre-planned, let me tell you, by the bankers, to allow the capitalistic system to get rid of the dead weight at all levels of management. All those jobs, you know, that we lost at the beginning of the recession, none of those have been refilled. So now the management that made it through are all now working 10 to 12-hour days and doing email on the weekends and on vacation. So after that purge, the banks have promoted another project they say is in every child's best interest, and that is a college education. So they came up with this idea of these student loans. Well, when the universities knew they were going to get all these new students, then they raised up all their prices. And now almost every graduate is saddled with a huge debt for his or her education that it's just going to be nearly impossible for them to pay off and will hang heavy, heavy over their heads for the rest of their productive lives as they try to earn a living in an economy that's now glutted with college education people who don't want to do basic need jobs, but who are starting to work at entry-level positions, with only a small percentage of them being able to jump through all the hoops to a middle management or upper management level position, where they could have some level of a decent income. But in exchange, now they are working 12-hour days and answering emails on the weekends and on vacations. How much debt is enough? I think in the minds of the bankers, there is never enough debt to satisfy their greedy balance sheets. Now, the word enough is defined by Webster as adequate or sufficient for the need. So how many homes does a person need to have? I just was totally dismayed to learn that Mitt Romney has 6 homes, all in different parts of the country, all huge homes with 6 to 8 bedrooms and full staffs in each one to maintain them. You know, you could only spend 2 months in each one each year to be able to enjoy them. What's the point of this? Wouldn't it just be better to go to a hotel if you wanted to visit 6 different areas of the country each year? Because that way you could go to all different parts of the country or even go to different countries. You wouldn't be tied down to just 6 locations. Because why would anyone need to have 6 homes? How many homes is enough? You know, there was a time in my life when I did not have a home. I had to rent a room in someone else's home. So I began decreeing for a home. I began to say out loud every day 12 times, a home for Marcianne's body, a home for Marcianne's body, a home for Marcianne's body, a home for Marcianne's body. And I did this 12 times in the morning and 12 times at night. And then I began to write it out in my journal, a home for Marcianne's body, pages and pages and pages. And then through a series of events, a car accident that wasn't my fault, and a $10,000 settlement, and meeting a friend at the pool who wanted to co-sign on the mortgage for me. His suggestion, since I already had the down payment, I just couldn't qualify for the mortgage, I was able to purchase a home for Marcy Ann's body in a retirement community here in Orange County. And then as I did my weddings every month, I put as much money into paying off that mortgage as I could. And I finally paid it off. And now I have a true, safe, and secure home for Marcy Ann's body. But I can't imagine having more than one home for myself. My home for Marcy Ann's body is so wonderful and so comforting. It gives me so much happiness. I have filled every nook and cranny with my precious possessions. And each item has been picked out personally by me and with purpose and design to create an environment of love for myself. And every place my eyes look, I see beauty and I feel love. So why would I need any more? For me, one home is enough. I wonder why Mrs. Romney needs six homes. Why isn't she content with just one home? Make it her precious, sacred place. Or is it Mr. Romney's ego that wants to be able to say he has six homes? Is it some sort of level of success he wishes to portray to his peers? Because I doubt if even the richest people in his social strata have six homes. This probably sets him apart in some way. Because, you know, even among the rich, there are judgments and comparisons. Because I knew a lady one time who told me that she and her husband were the poorest couple in their group. And they had a 6,000-square-foot home on 17 acres, a yacht and an airplane, and a month's vacation in Hawaii every year in the house that Barbara Streisand rents. I wonder what Mrs. Romney feels when she visits all of her homes. I would feel just total frustration. I just can't imagine keeping track of 35 bedrooms and having sheets and pillowcases and blankets for each bed. So much to take care of. So much to be responsible for. So much to figure out. Just too much. Too much! One home is enough for me. And what creates the need for Dick Cheney and Warren Buffett or the Waltons to make more money and more money and more money? How much is enough? Does it just begin to be a challenge to them? Certainly they must have enough money to satisfy their needs. I've always thought of a need as something you just can't do without, you know, like air to breathe or food to eat, or perhaps a bed to lay your head down on at night to sleep. But then when my granddaughter was here, we accidentally drove through Skid Row in Los Angeles. We saw hundreds of people who were just laying down on the sidewalk on a towel or on a sleeping bag to sleep at night after they had fished through all the trash cans to find a bite of food. We were just horrified, and we realized how fortunate we were to have good food to eat every day and a warm, comfortable bed to sleep in at night. I read an article in the Huffington Post this week that said if a person gets a raise, that 90% of these people will spend that raise. Only 10% save the money or use it to pay off debt. 90% will buy a new car or get new bedroom furniture or get a new pair of $150 tennis shoes or get a new big touch screen game-ready TV or some other type of electronic equipment like an iPad or an iPod. And I know some ladies who have 50 pairs of shoes and 20 purses. How much is enough? A friend of mine has just now retired, and he worked until he was 75 years old because he said he didn't think he could retire unless he had at least $5 million saved. Ooh, I looked at my investment portfolio and I thought to myself, oh dear, I don't even have a half of a million, much less $5 million to make it through until I die. I wonder how many young people even think about this. How much is enough in order to retire? We're living in a time when many people are depending upon their retirement and pension funds to take care of them when they're no longer working. And most of these retirement and pension funds are bankrupt. Here in California, just last week, it was declared that the teacher's pension fund is bankrupt in California. And all those teachers who have worked for all those years, now their future is in jeopardy. And you know, teachers don't have Social Security as a backup. Their teacher retirement is it. How irresponsible is it for a state government to bankrupt a teacher retirement program? How can these trusted elected statesmen face an electorate and ask for re-election? But really, you know, who even cares? Who even knows? I'm sure the teachers know. And I'm sure that really, down deep inside of themselves, they're really scared. But on the surface, they maybe are just trying to convince themselves that something will happen. Someone will come forth with some provision from some place, and everything will be okay. Surely we won't be abandoned. But most state government workers' pension funds in a lot of states are bankrupt. And I think I told you about my friend Linda, who worked 38 years for United Airlines, and United Airlines went bankrupt. And when Continental Airlines took over United Airlines, the United pension programs were tossed over onto the U.S. government pension salvation funds, and now she only gets 65% of the pension she thought she was going to get. And at 65 years old, what can she do now to recoup the loss? Many times she worked flights and didn't take her salary, but had them put it into the pension fund so that she could have more than enough to live on when she retired. And now she's having to rent a room in another person's home in order to make it today. No personal home for Linda's body. I had lunch with her this last week, and I could see the strain on her face. And I could feel the hurt in her heart. And I could feel her hopelessness, her unsuccessful attempts to accept her situation. I could hear the cry in her voice as she told me, "I just don't know, Marcy, how much longer I can deal with not having my own space, not having my own home where I can spread out my things. And I can find something without having to go to storage and root through all the boxes. Marcy, this is so unfair. I just really must be a bad person." So I thought about how much is enough. I could feel this underlying core belief system that serves to rule our judgments of how much is enough. And I think this core belief system, I must really be bad, is what lies at the heart of the collective. Actually, it lays in the heart of the collective, that we're just not worthy. We're just not deserving. We are not good enough. We are bad. We're an embarrassment. We're just sinners. Well, in 1986, I took the responsibility for my own provision into my own hands. And to do this, I had to decide how much I was worth. I had to establish my worth. I had to decide that I was deserving to have what I had determined as my personal worth. And to make this decision, I had to examine my absolute essence as a person, a human being, a form of clay that had the breath of life breathed into it and became a living soul. And before I could determine how much was enough to satisfy all of my needs, I had to realize that I was good enough to have enough. And here are the steps I took to realize that I was good enough, to satisfy not only all of my needs, but all of my deepest desires, my fondest hopes, and my most impossible dreams. And the first place I had to go was to the foundation of the Christian faith that had been taught to me. Now, worldwide, 33% declare a Christian faith, and 21% are Muslims, which also supports a belief system of needing redemption. Actually, in the U.S., 74% of the people who live in this country have this foundation, either as a Protestant or a Catholic. And whether these 74% of the people actually go to the church or not, there is an underlying fundamental core belief system of having been born a sinner and needing a Savior to die for us, to make us worthy to have the blessing of God. And in my studies to establish my own personal worthiness, I discovered that the 12% of the people worldwide who say they are Jewish represent the richest people on the earth. And the 12% of the world, which represents the Buddhists and Hindus, are the second richest people on the earth. And the 16% who declared they had no religion at all were the next richest. And the 6% who were indigenous were the poorest. So, in studying this, I realized Jewish people, Buddhists, and Hindus have never been taught that they are sinners. They are born knowing that they are the people of God. You know, the Jewish people even call themselves God's chosen people. And this is embedded in their consciousness because it's been long established as truth. So this, to me, was the first proof that a sinless consciousness is associated with worth and value. So I studied the Talmud and the Kabbalah. And then I studied Hinduism. And finally, for 5 years, I studied and practiced the Dzogchen Buddhism. Now, that's spelled D as in David, Z as in zebra, O-G, C-H-E-N, Dzogchen Buddhism. This is the highest teachings of the secret mystery schools. And the Dzogchen has only been on the earth for general study now for about the last 25 years. And the teacher who brought it to the West is Lama Suridas. And I suggest you look him up, Lama, L-A-M-A, Suri, S-U-R-Y-A, Das, D-A-S. He was originally born to Jewish parents in New York City, and he felt the call to go to Tibet, and he then spent the next 30 years in a monastery there. And then he was led to come back to the U.S. and bring the sacred teachings here. And I just would recommend anyone to study these teachings, because these were the teachings that finally broke me loose from the domination and control of the Christian faith that was rooted in fear, the devil, sin, and death. And it taught me that I was perfect in my natural state. And everything is perfect in its natural state. And I was introduced to the God of this perfection. This God only knows how to act perfectly. Everything he does is perfect. God knows nothing about fear and sin and death. This God is love. This God is perfect, and this God has made everything in his image. So his image is perfect, and everything he makes is perfect. And he desires fellowship, and in his perfection, he desires fellowship with his perfect creation. And I am a part of this creation. I have been created by this perfect God, so therefore I am perfect, and therefore I am worthy of fellowship with this perfect God. The breath of this perfect God allows me to have my life. The spark of this perfect God's love beats my heart, and I am safe and secure in this God's love and his care for me. I am free. I am not judged. I am not condemned. I am just loved. And all things have been provided for my good because I am good. I am good enough. I am perfect in my natural state. And I don't need for someone to have to die and shed their blood to reconcile me to a hateful God of judgment and condemnation. I don't need for Jesus to die for my sins because I was not born a sinner. I was born perfect in my natural state. And in my heart, my natural state is to love and to be loved. So then I did some research into the beginnings of the Christian Catholic Church, and I found that the people who had crucified Jesus also infiltrated all these little groups who had followed Jesus and were trying to set up a framework for continuing to teach what Jesus had taught. And Jesus had said before he was crucified that the authorities of his day opposed him. He said he was the way, the truth, and the life, and he said they opposed the truth because they didn't want the people to know that they were also perfect in their natural state and that they could do all of the things that Jesus did. So they set up all the rules and regulations for the Christian Catholic Church, and they made Jesus, the only begotten Son of God, the only one. And then they added that he was born of a virgin. So that made sure that Jesus was surely something that we are not. So we couldn't identify with being the same as he was. And that kept us powerless and defeated in our sinful state. And Jesus stopped Paul one day on the road to Damascus and pleaded with him to carry on with the truth. And Paul did try, but Paul was also stopped and sent to prison. And by 312 AD, the church was totally indoctrinated and in the deadly grip of the power of sin and death and the fear of a forever burning hell for eternity. And you know what? Still today, 2014 years later, there's a vast majority of those who profess to be a Christian who do not know that their salvation provides for total health and abundant prosperity. Most are unconscious and unaware that Jesus said the kingdom of God is within them. All the power that Jesus had is available today. Every person who is born and breathes the breath of God and becomes a living soul has the power of the kingdom of God within them. And only and until they wake up and become consciously aware of who they are and what their purpose is, the world will just continue to turn. And the powers of sin and darkness will continue to play their games for their highest and best good and to fill their bank accounts with our money. And we may never have enough to live a blissful life, much less be able to retire. Recently here in Orange County, the son of the pastor of the biggest Christian church in our area committed suicide because all his life he had heard that when he died, he finally would be able to go to heaven where everything is wonderful and we'll walk on streets of gold and have a mansion next to Jesus and we will not be sick and all sorrow and tears will be turned into laughter and happiness. So he took his own life in order to get there when it's right here, right now. So my message to you this morning is, wake up! Wake up! You are also perfect in your natural state. You are also made by a perfect God who does everything perfectly. You are also accepted and loved by this God that does everything perfectly. And nothing that he has made is less than perfect. You are worthy. You are enough. You are good enough. How much is enough? You are enough. And I would like to invite you to come to my Friday night 21st century prayer meeting. I'm doing this every Friday night now at 7 p.m., which is Pacific Coast Daylight Time, to help everyone begin to experience our perfection and to have time to turn into our hearts and with the breath of God that gives us our life and to begin to listen to that perfect God spark that beats our heart. Because as we become awake and aware and that we are connected and that we are also God's only begotten Son, we will begin to realize what we are here to do. And as we begin to know that we are enough, then everything in our life will become enough. And we will want for nothing. You will have enough. You are enough. You already have everything that you need to fulfill the desires of your heart and to be what your perfect God desires for you to be. And now all you need to do is to become who you already are. You are enough. And this is Marcy Ann. And I'm going to say aloha now. And aloha in the wonderful language of the Hawaiian people is hello, goodbye, and I love you. My music is by visionarymusic.com. Music to enable you to become all that you already are.